Good afternoon. This is Kim Koppelman sitting in for Steve Hallstrom today as Steve gets a well-deserved day off. And it's good to be back with you again. For those that may not be familiar with your guest host today, I'm a former, I often say a recovering legislator. I served in the North Dakota legislature for 28 years and chaired the Judiciary Committee for many of those years. I was Speaker of the House before I retired. Also had the privilege to chair the Council of State Governments nationally, so I've had a fair amount of background in government, state government, and so on. Also a local businessman. As many of you may know, in North Dakota, we are all part-time legislators. I should say they are all, since I'm not doing that anymore. But everyone has a job or a business or something like that, and the farm, whatever it might be. They have a real occupation. They are real citizens, but they're elected to serve and represent the people of the state. So it's good to be with you. In my real life, we do marketing and communications and that kind of work, and I'm sort of semi-retired, but I also serve as a board member and a policy fellow for American Experiment North Dakota, and we're going to be talking a little bit about things today that refer to that and relate to that, and do a few other things, serve on a couple of other boards and so on, and I'm honored that Steve asks me frequently to come and fill in for him. A lot of things we could talk about today, and we have a guest waiting for us on the line. I want to visit with him. I know a topic that all of us have been hearing a lot about for the past week plus, the past almost 10 days now, is the shooting, the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And for many people, that has affected them in different ways. I wanted to begin by reading to you something that I wrote the day this happened, because it's received a lot of feedback, and I'm just curious what you think about it, and encourage you as we go forward here, and then we'll go to our guest, who is a man named David Zimmer. I'll introduce him in a moment, with some law enforcement background and so on. But I've noticed that a lot of people have a lot of different reactions to this event and other events that we've dealt with frequently and recently, and some not so recently, some time ago. What I wrote was, "This must stop." Many across our nation were shocked and saddened as we heard the news of the shooting of Charlie Kirk, a young conservative leader, and not long afterward of his death. This must stop. This tragedy is not only the most recent in a long line of violent attacks with apparent political or ideological motives, it is an epidemic, a cancer on our culture, and it is up to each of us to end it. Certainly, we all believe in personal responsibility, so clearly, each senseless act is the fault of the perpetrator. But do our culture, our politics, our national psyche play a role? Inescapably so. A culture which devalues human life and denigrates those with whom we may differ or disagree to the level of hatred so deep that it motivates murder is sick and in desperate need of a return to the values which have characterized America for most of our history. Clearly, this violence is not limited to one political party or one point of view. In 2017, Congressman Steve Scalise, a Republican from Louisiana, was nearly killed, shot by an assassin with political motives during a congressional baseball game near the nation's capital. In 2022, the husband of then-Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat from California, was brutally attacked and beaten in their San Francisco home by an attacker with apparent political motives. President Trump came inches from being assassinated at a campaign rally in Pennsylvania last year. Most will remember the killing of an insurance company executive from Minnesota on the streets of New York not long ago, apparently motivated by disagreement over insurance industry standards. And even more recently, the brutal shootings which killed two children at a Catholic school in Minneapolis. These senseless acts are hitting close to home for me. Only 3 short months ago, former Minnesota Speaker of the House Melissa Hortman, a Democrat, and her husband Mark were shot in their home in the Twin Cities and killed. And her colleague and his wife were shot in their home on the same night by the same deranged perpetrator, and thankfully they survived. As I wrote then, I knew Speaker Hortman, and we served as Speakers of the House from neighboring states together. Today's tragic news brought back memories not only of when I welcomed Charlie Kirk to North Dakota as Speaker of the House, but also when I first met him over dinner, one quiet evening many years before. Then a very young man, he shared his vision with a few of us as he just launched a small fledgling organization focused on engaging young people in America on cultural, philosophical, and political issues. I'm just old enough to barely remember, I think I was in first grade, the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, and a few years later of Senator Robert Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King. That was also during a violent time of unrest and upheaval in our nation, but we mourned together, regardless of political stripes. We condemned such acts of violence, mourning not only for the families and loved ones of the fallen, but also for our nation. We must do so again, and then we must recover, reconsider, and reshape our society if we hoped for it to survive. We must return to the values which have bound us together, not only as Americans, but as decent human beings. Values like mutual respect were once common, and they overcame any impulse to turn our differences into hatred and violence. Not anymore. Then, commitment to civility when we did discuss differences was common. We regularly engaged in spirited debate and strove to understand and value one another, even when we disagreed. Often, we believed we could persuade one another, even a little, through such debates. That's only possible if we first value and respect one another. It would seem that we now view those with whom we disagree over cultural or political issues as enemies, in the eyes of some, and, for the least stable, as enemies deserving of death. Couple that with a mental health crisis, and the most deranged are motivated to carry out acts which would bring such attitudes to their logical, tragic conclusion. When will these senseless acts shock us enough to wake us up? Only when we begin again to respect one another as fellow human beings and, if you share my Christian faith, as those created in the image of God and therefore having value and worth. Disagreement is not the cancer on our nation. Hatred of those with whom we disagree is. As I watched vitriol increase and the hatred rise over the years, I was somewhat comforted by the realization that we didn't really see it then in my home state of North Dakota. Although our political debates in the legislature were lively and passionate at times, they were usually civil and respectful. That's changed here too, but thankfully so far not to the point of violence. The trend, however, is inescapable. Politics and culture clashes are filled with hatred and civility is in short supply. That's one of the reasons that I've participated in and joined the board of the legislative efforts of NICD, the National Institute of Civil Discourse, which is committed to attempting to help restore civility in legislatures across the nation. Let's all commit to being part of the solution rather than remaining silent or being part of the problem. Let's see one another again as fellow human beings. Fellow Americans, worthy of dignity and respect. When we disagree, as we will, let's commit to doing it with respect and civility, and let's join together to condemn and put to an end the violence we're all suffering through in America these days. That was what I shared on Wednesday of last week, September 10th, when this tragic event occurred. I've had a lot of feedback on that, most complimentary, some challenging, and I encourage you to respond. Tell me what you think. If you think I'm off base, on base, if you agree, disagree, let's have some of that civil discourse here on the air today. We're being joined now by a gentleman who is actually a colleague of mine with the American Experiment. The Center of the American Experiment is an organization that's been around in Minnesota for several years. It's sort of a center-right think tank. And they formed a North Dakota entity a few years ago and invited me to join their board in North Dakota. I agreed to do that and have enjoyed doing that. And then about 6 or 7 months ago, they asked if I would become a policy fellow for them, basically doing some policy analysis and writing in North Dakota, which I've done. And it's a part-time thing, but I enjoy it immensely. It gives me an opportunity to sort of keep my fingers in the pie with public affairs and public issues and so on. And another gentleman who is a policy fellow in Minnesota is named David Zimmer. He's a former law enforcement official. He also has written on this topic, and I've read what he wrote and am impressed with that as well. And so I invited David to join us on the air today and delve into some of this. David, are you with us?
I'm with you, Kim.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, welcome. It's good to have you on the air with us. And what is your take on all of this? You come at it from a couple different perspectives. I mean, like all of us, observing and having whatever reactions we emanate from this kind of a situation. But
yeah.
Your law enforcement background must come into play. I mean, you've seen violence, you've seen crime, you've dealt with it and enforced the laws. How does this? What kind of impact does this have on you?
Well, that's a good question. I see the political violence that we've been experiencing recently as just something completely different than from what I dealt with in, you know, traditional law enforcement. Traditional criminal violence is, you know, based on a lot of things totally different than this political violence that we're seeing. So,
sure.
I certainly don't espouse to be an expert in this, but I would agree with your take that our culture is really sick right now. You know, we're, you know, for a variety of reasons, and in no particular order, the advent of social media, a generation whose life was put on hold during COVID, political polarization, kind of an increase in the amount of narcissism we see in our society, and just all kinds of falling away from faith, the devaluation of life, and the desensitization to violence, you know, in the media and in movies and all that. It just kind of all adds up to something that has infected our culture. And I like to say that we didn't just come upon this problem in recent months, and we're not going to cure it in a few months. It's going to take a sustained effort to really repair these things that have eaten away at our common culture. Maybe that's a little too deep for for an ex-cop, but
no, I think it's very insightful observations. And you echo something that I said and what I just read and had written, and that is that many of the things actually that I was thinking, but you know, the devaluation of human life, the fact that we don't value human beings the way we used to. I shouldn't, and I don't believe that's, I don't know how widespread it is. I certainly don't believe it's universal in our culture or our society, but it's too large, you know, too great a number of people apparently don't have that kind of respect for other human beings. And I think there may be a lot of reasons for that. You've outlined some of them. Let's just talk about a couple of those. You talked about social media, and I've heard people raise that as a possible, again, not a sole cause, but I think even the governor of Utah, who I thought did a masterful job of navigating this, what a challenging thing to do, what a difficult time to have to weigh in and sort of marshal this effort through and the response to it. But he talked about that. He talked about what social media does. What do you think it does that's different when it comes to discourse and disagreement and discussion?
Yeah. You know, I kind of feel like it has led to an atrophy of our social graces, you know, or our ability to socialize. Let me put it that way. When so many people just spend so much time on social media and not in face-to-face discussions and dealing with the discord in a face-to-face manner, but rather, it's similar to road rage. People act completely different when they're separated from one another in cars, and they're, you know, people just are a completely different person, and they become aggressive, and they're willing to give somebody the finger where they would never do that if you're standing in line in a store face to face, right?
Interesting.
So
it's
kind of that. I see it as that kind of, I don't know the word for it, but
parallel or
that environment that allows for people to be different than they would be if they were dealing with somebody face to face. And we have atrophied in our ability to relate with one another in a civil way, in a respectful way, and in a productive way.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a great point. I mean, my experience in the world of being an elected official is, of course, you get some pushback. People disagree with you on issues from time to time and so on. And most of them are civil, and most of them, want to engage or at least share their opinion with you in a civil way. But occasionally you'll get, especially with social media, as you mentioned, I would get emails or I'd get, some comment that was pretty edgy and somebody really, taking after me or calling me names. Didn't happen a lot, but once in a while. And my response was always the same. I'd say, hey, I appreciate your perspective and your point of view. I said, let's get together for a cup of coffee and talk about that. I'd send them a response online or in an email. Crickets. I'd never hear back. And people are a lot more courageous behind a keyboard than they are face-to-face, as you point out.
But I do think it is so important that we continue to strive for face-to-face discussion and face-to-face, working through issues face-to-face, and not through social media.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, technology is wonderful in many ways, but I think this is one example of where it can be problematic, at least if it's misused. And it's a reminder to all of us to be careful about that. And
right.
David, you wrote some things about this event, and I was struck by many of the things you said, but one of them you said, many on the left have blamed Kirk and the events as divisive. But anyone who has taken the time to watch some of these events know the truth. Kirk was always respectful and kind and was immensely talented at boiling away rhetoric that would otherwise derail productive debate. You say Kirk focused on facts, history, reason, and logic, all the while remaining unapologetically conservative and devoutly Christian. His work was profoundly important at a time when college campuses had become no-go zones for conservative opinions and policy advocacy. That's well said, and I think that is really, really true and really important. Some people, I've talked to several people now who have said, I had no idea, including my wife, by the way, who said, I had no idea who Charlie Kirk was. And, but a lot of them have now dug into it and maybe watched some of the clips that are available, that come up online and that kind of thing, and have a better understanding. What's been refreshing a little bit for those who are willing to consider him with an open mind, is some of, I've heard all this rhetoric about how hateful he was and how cruel he was and all that, but he said, I watched some of the things he said and did, and I didn't feel that way at all about it. And
he was
direct, and he was sort of no nonsense if someone was, being ridiculous in their point of view, but at the same time, he was respectful, and he did not chew them out. He did not call them names. He didn't do anything that denigrated them in any way. He would just debate the issues. I remember one that I watched, for example, where and Charlie Kirk never went to college. Well, he did go to college for a brief time and decided this isn't worth it. I'm not going to. And he was a very intelligent guy, as everyone who had been around him or listened to him knows. But one person kind of challenged him on that and said, well, you haven't even graduated from college, and I have a master's degree and whatever. And he was going on and on and trying to sort of one up him in a debate over an issue. And Charlie Kirk just looked at him and he said, well, you want to compare resumes or talk about ideas?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way, you know.
Yeah, I think he frequently said, do you want to debate resumes or debate issues?
That's right.
And,
that's right.
That would always bring people back to the issue.
So. That's right. Exactly. And, that's direct. That's, you could say that's in your face, but certainly not hateful. It's not cruel or rude. And so I think people and some people have mischaracterized him to the point, here's a piece that I read, I think just yesterday. It says, an assistant campus director at George Washington University took to social media shortly after the assassination of Charlie Kirk and said it is fair that Kirk was gunned down due to his support of gun ownership and the Second Amendment. He said, if nothing else, it is fair in a nation where children get massacred by gun violence on the regular that people who advocate for continued gun ownership at the expense of those children are not immune from the consequences of their advocacy. Anthony Poharlik, I think I'm pronouncing that, Assistant Director of Academic Initiatives at George Washington University's Mount Vernon campus, posted that on his personal Facebook page after Kirk was killed. No thoughts, no thoughts, no prayers is how he ended it. And GW, the university, came out after that. It said, it lists him, by the way, as a person who uses the pronouns he, him in his bio, as working for the campus living and residential education department. This was their statement. The George Washington University unequivocally condemns all forms of violence. Good for them. University spokesman told the news outlet. And it says, as a university with one of the most politically engaged campus communities in the country, we believe everyone is entitled to their beliefs and no one should ever be subject to violence for expressing their views. This individual employee is not authorized to speak on behalf of GW, and his opinions do not reflect those of the university. So good for them. They at least clarified that. But that's the kind of thing I see. And how does that strike you?
Well, you know, I go back to there's been some polling recently over the last several months that have really kind of spelled out how, even though we all say we want to be united, it doesn't seem like we all really mean it. And, you know, I'm not trying to divide here, but it seems to be the truth in this polling that people that identify on the right are seem to be a little more willing to have, you know, respectful discord and don't feel that assassination or murder is, you know, quote unquote, somewhat acceptable. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you've seen this, these polls, but one of them showed that people that just identified as leaning left, somewhere close to 52%, this was a few months ago, 52% felt it was somewhat acceptable to assassinate President Trump or Elon Musk at the time. And it's just amazing. And in the same respect, the poll showed that people that leaned right or identified right were in the single digits, you know, still too high. I mean, the fact that 10% or 7% or whatever it was of people leaning right would even feel that's acceptable is too high. But 52%, my gosh, we're, I don't know how to deal with that. Other than to say we just have to be the model, I guess.
Right.
When I say we, conservatives need to model the behavior that we want to see everybody exhibit. And that's all we can do is just be that example, be that model.
That's true. And you know, it's interesting. When I mean, as I mentioned earlier, I served in the legislature for 28 years, so a long time. But when I first came, it was common to work together across the aisle on issues that were not particularly partisan or political, you know, ideological in nature. And a lot of the things you vote on in a legislature are not. And I was happy to do that. I mean, to partner with people who were from the other party. I could share a couple examples of that in May. But it seems like it's become oil and water even in you know, those arenas. And perhaps they mirror society. You know, when society gets that divided, so do the people who people in society elect to represent them. If you have the time to hang around, David, I'd like to have you do that over the break. We need to take a bit of a break here, but we'll continue after that with David Zimmer. Good afternoon and welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Kim Koppelman filling in for Steve Hallstrom today. And we've been talking a bit about not only the Charlie Kirk assassination, but the broader picture of political assassinations in our country historically and how we've responded to those, some recent, some decades old. And we also have on the phone with us a guest, David Zimmer, who is a policy fellow with American Experiment and Center of the American Experiment. He's a former law enforcement officer, and so he has that perspective, and he writes on a lot of these issues. And we've been talking about where we are as a nation and how we're responding to this. And by the way, if you would like to talk to David or express your opinion, if you have questions, call in. The Valley Christian Counseling phone line number is 701-271-1100, 701-271-1100. You can also email the studio at studio@flagfamily.com, or you can text us at 701-237-1590. David, we've been talking about this issue you just pointed out, that some polling has shown that maybe conservatives are not as violent or not willing to take disagreement to violence as readily as people from other political perspectives, and polling seems to indicate that, and that may be true. I think, though, it's just my opinion, and feel free to agree or disagree, but I think that we are at a point, however, where that should not be our focus, because so many of the reactions that I'm seeing are finger pointing one way or the other. And, you know, whether it's the left calling the right fascists and, you know, whatever else they want to ascribe to those who differ with them that way, or whether it's the right, you know, calling the left other names and maybe underscoring their failings. I think we're at a point where the best thing we can do is try to find some civility and engage in differences of ideas without, and not only without violence and without murder, but without hatred. I think that's really the core of the issue. It's like, can I really disagree with somebody and still like them and still get along with them, still respect them right. as human beings? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, you make a really good point. And hopefully I didn't take the conversation in a direction where you thought I'm just trying to finger point. That wasn't my intention, I guess.
No, I didn't mean to imply that.
No, but what I guess I do feel it's important that as we work through these things, we do know where each side stands. I mean, there really are sides to this. I think we would be ignoring the obvious if we tried to suggest that we can all just quickly come together here. We mm-hmm. are really polarized right now, and I think we have to understand where each side is sitting on the issue. And so that's why I brought the polling up, because it kind of points to at least some pretty dramatic differences in how we see and how we might tolerate violence. It's worth at least knowing.
Absolutely, and don't misunderstand. I'm not chastising you for mentioning that. I just hear so much of the response being, "Oh yeah, but," you know, the other side,
right.
from both, you know, from people at all perspectives, rather than saying, you know, "Let's talk about this." But you raise another aspect of this that I think is worth talking about, and that is that, you know, for years, as I've talked about civility, not in the context of violence or murder, but just about civility in political discussions, in political bodies like legislatures and so on, what people usually assume is that if you're civil, you don't have strong views. In other words, if you want to talk about civility, that must mean you're part of the squishy middle. You're either a left-leaning Republican or a right-leaning Democrat, and you're not anybody that's really passionate about your views or positions, or you take strong positions, et cetera. And I beg to differ. I don't think that's true. I think you can be as left-wing, left-leaning as you want to be. You can be as right-wing, libertarian, whatever it is, as you want to be. And you can still respect people and disagree civilly. And my friend Mike Huckabee, I think, said it best. He said, "I'm a conservative. I'm just not mad about it." And I think that's
there you go.
And I think that's really, I mean, that's how I feel. And yet I see too few people doing that. And I think part of the reason is that people are passionate. So they start, you know, expressing or espousing their position, and they want to do it forcefully. And part of the way they do that is by, you know, stomping and snorting and pounding the table and, unfortunately, sometimes denigrating their opponents or people on the other side of the issue.
Right.
When I was first elected to the legislature, the gentleman who had been my high school government teacher, football coach, and principal, small school, small town, was also in the legislature. He had been there for a couple of years, and he was a Democrat, or at least he ran as a Democrat. He was a pretty conservative guy, actually, but in that district, I think you needed to be a Democrat to get elected at the time. And I walked up to him the first day of the session, and I shook his hand, and we kind of smiled, and I said, "Does this mean I can call you Howard now instead of Mr. Grumbo?" And he said, "Yeah, I think we can do that." And we chuckled. And the Republicans in North Dakota then, as now, had a supermajority in the House of Representatives. So Democrats couldn't get much done. I mean, any bill they would introduce, you know, with their name on it was dead on arrival. It wasn't going anywhere. And a lot of them didn't even have their name on any legislation as co-sponsors. So I made it a point each session that he and I were there together to take a bill that I was sponsoring that was not partisan, was not ideological, as many of them are not. And I asked him to sign on as a co-sponsor. And we had one bill like that each session. And I think we served, I don't know, four or five or six sessions together. I don't even remember how many. And every one of those bills passed. I mean, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about when I'm talking about building these bridges. And
sure.
You know, if we're gonna passionately disagree on things, okay, that's fair game. That's part of the process. But can we find something we agree on? Can we find some common ground?
Common ground, right?
You know, it doesn't mean we need to compromise our most passionately held positions, but it does mean that we need to be civil enough to respect each other as human beings and say, you know, there's something about you. I want to find something about you that I really like and I can appreciate.
Right. You know, one thing we've done here at American Experiment, or I've done with the public safety position here, is do just that. I've reached out to a progressive policy group here in the Twin Cities and gotten together with them. And, you know, 99% of public safety issues we see differently. But we have agreed on a couple of issues in the last year that that we can work on together. And so we did a project with the city of Minneapolis on homeless encampments. And we agreed we're not going to try to solve homelessness, mm-hmm. but we can agree that homeless encampments are not compassion. They're not the right way to go. And so we, as differing policy organizations, came together on that issue, worked with the city of Minneapolis, and the city, which had allowed homeless encampments for several years now, mm-hmm. Has now taken has drawn the line in the sand that homeless encampments violate the public trust and that public contract. Mm-hmm. And so, for the most part, they remove them or they don't allow them to spring up now. And that's because of that coming together. You know, two groups with very different opinions on most issues, we mm-hmm. found common ground. And when you find that common ground, it can be really powerful. And
absolutely.
It can really persuade people. So
I think you're absolutely right. And it's a head turner. I mean, people say, what in the world is this group and that group doing working together? I thought they hated each other, you know? So,
right.
And you know, over the years in the legislature, I chaired the Judiciary Committee for many years. And I remember one instance where there was a freshman member of the committee and of the legislature who was, from the other party. She was a Democrat, and she had all kinds of ideas. She came into the committee with four different bills that I read and thought, you know, I see what she's trying to do here, and I think there's some merit in it, but her approach is entirely wrong, and I could do nothing and let this bill die because it would have on its face, or I can try to help her accomplish her goal in a different way. And I remember one example was dealing with human trafficking, which you probably have dealt with in your law enforcement
sure.
career, and we passed several pieces of legislation on that. And she had a bill that would have required hotels to do all kinds of training and of their employees and so on, and for noticing human trafficking and reporting and doing whatever, and would have had all kinds of hard-hitting penalties if they didn't do it. And I
yep.
said, you know, you've got a stick here. Why don't you turn this into a carrot? I see what you're trying to do, but, you know, that's going to be a real infringement and a burden on business. And I don't think a conservative legislature is going to pass that. But if you want to accomplish the goal, why not use a carrot instead of a stick? Why don't you give them an incentive to do this? So she said, that's a great idea. So she did. She amended the bill, or I helped her amend the bill in order to do that, and it passed easily. And, you know, those
yeah.
are the kinds of things you're talking about, I think.
Yeah, I'm reminded, it might be a little different, but I'm yep. also reminded of the saying, you can catch a lot more flies with honey than vinegar or
absolutely.
something like that.
Absolutely.
And, I'm not always the best at it, but I keep that in the back of my mind.
Well, I think now, and the only reason that I mentioned, and I didn't mean to push back on your earlier, you know, your discussion about conservative perspectives versus liberal,
yeah.
is that I think now is a time when we really need to say, okay, we are never going to agree on certain issues, and that's okay. What we need to do is try to find that human standard of coming together as human beings. I'm trying to do this with a gentleman right now who is a very staunch liberal, and just come. And it's difficult even to have a conversation for him. You know, I'm perfectly willing. But I, because of that division we see in our culture and our divide in our politics these days, I think those are some of the things. And as I read earlier, as I wrote, this starts with each one of us. And I think what we need to do is ask ourselves, you know, okay, what is my life like? What is my sphere of influence like? What are the friends and family and neighbors and coworkers and people I talk to regularly? What's my relationship with them like? And if there are those that I know I disagree with politically, are we butting heads all the time and throwing rotten tomatoes at each other? Are we on a friendly level at some friendly basis at some level? And if not, how do we do that? You know, you know, maybe our kids are on the same softball team, or maybe, you know, we can have a neighborhood cookout, or maybe, you know, whatever it is, there are ways to just relate with people as people. And anyway, so I you know, I don't mean to go on and on about that, but I think it's an important example. Speaking of this, though, tell us the story, if you would. I know that the former offices and headquarters of Center of the American Experiment in Minnesota were attacked not long ago, were firebombed.
Yeah, boy, now I'm going to have to do this off the top of my head.
That's
here,
okay.
I didn't
give you any warning about that.
No, that's fine. I think it was about a year and a half ago already.
Has it been okay?
Over the weekend, somebody broke into our office building, and we weren't the only offices in this building, but there were three offices associated with American Experiment that were all targeted. Mm. And so an arsonist came in with gas and matches and just doused gas throughout a couple of the offices and in the hallway outside of our main office, and completely destroyed a major office building in the metropolitan area. Mm. And targeted us because of our, you know, presumably because of our conservative stance on things. And it really hit home when you think about it. It's like, wow, people are so polarized that they're willing to do something like that because they disagree with,
right,
you know, with our position.
Right.
And unfortunately, up to this point, nobody's ever been caught. The FBI is actually working the case, mm-hmm, still. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have some evidence that they haven't even shared with us, but sure. I can kind of assume what they know. And but they've not been able to identify anybody, and nobody has claimed responsibility. So it's
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, it's another example. I think our colleague John Phelan wrote about that, and recently in the wake of the Charlie Kirk assassination also, as just another example of where we are, what we've been talking about, where we are societally. And I think, you know, we've gotten into the topic also since this, in the aftermath, the topic of free speech. And, you know, I have heard people say speech is violence. I've heard that phrase a few times. And if you take that mindset to its logical conclusion, that's where someone, particularly on the left in this case, I guess, are justifying some of this activity and saying, you know, if you speak something that's hurtful to me, or that is, and you know, put that back in the Charlie Kirk, concept or context, and you know, some of the things he would say were head on and forthright, you know, not cruel, but if you have the mindset that says, you know, anytime you challenge something that I believe or feel, you're committing violence on me or to me, I guess then you can, in some kind of warped manner of thinking, justify violence in return. I've been thinking about that lately. Do you, has that occurred to you, or do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I think you're hitting on something that at times it's kind of hard to articulate and describe, but you're spot on that people, something that, the mechanism that people use to justify their what they want to do. So they, you know, I think it has to do with labeling people and identifying people as a threat. And then once you do that, boy, then you're justified in, you're the victim then.
Yeah.
And so you're justified in, lashing out or defending yourself. And that's a really dangerous place to be.
Exactly. We have some things here that I'd like to play, and I'm going to go to one real quickly here. Some sound bites. There's a website called AmericaBetterThanThis.com. And they are little snippets of people talking in the wake of this event, and giving their response and their take on it. This one is from a young lady named Elle, who is from Utah, who was apparently there at this event. And if you have that, Addison, let's play that.
Hello, I'm here at Utah Valley University, where yesterday's tragic act of political violence against Charlie Kirk took place, which is almost so minutes away from my own home. This heartbreaking moment reminds us how dangerous our nation's divisions have become. In times like this, people across the political spectrum are hurting. Whether you lean left or right, anger, fear, and grief are natural responses. But if we allow emotions to turn into hostility towards each other, our divides will only deepen, and the political violence crisis in our country will only become worse. Instead, let us mourn, have empathy for those around us, and commit to meeting one another with compassion and respect. That is the only way our country can begin to heal. The National Institute of Civil Discourse is proving that even in the hardest moments, dialogue is possible, and deep polarization divides can be bridged and healed. I invite you to take action. Join us, be part of a program at the NICD, or start one courageous conversation at a time in your own community. Healing begins with each of us, and together we can reject violence and build a safer, stronger democracy. We are better than this.
Well, that's just one observation from a young lady that lived through this. I can't imagine the horror of that.
That's one smart young lady and very impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, David, I appreciate you being with us today. This is a topic that people have been talking about for a week and a half, and I don't think that discussion is going to go away anytime soon. But I really appreciate what you've said and written, and it's an important thing to keep on the front burner of our hearts and minds as we think about how our society can improve and get past this and come out on the better end of it.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on. And maybe very quickly, as a ray of hope,
yes,
if our country can survive and move forward after a civil war, I think we can get through this as well.
Amen. I think you're right. All right, my friend, thank you for being with us today.
All right.
David Zimmer from the Center of American Experiment, and we'll go to break and be back after the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is Kim Koppelman sitting in for Steve Hallstrom today, and it's good to be with you on a rainy day as a lot of people head home from work, head out from the weekend. A few splashes of water out there, so please drive carefully. Probably some hydroplaning going on and some water in your windshield. So as we look out at the interstate highway here, I want to make sure that you're careful as you go. We've been talking about a lot of interesting things in the last hour, and a lot of them relating not only to the Charlie Kirk assassination, but also to previous ones, and some more recent, some more distant historically, and how our country has responded. And it's very interesting to ponder that, and really the need, perhaps how we've changed, how we're different in how we've responded versus many years ago to these kinds of events. And where does that put us? Where does that take us? How do we respond? And my premise is that it starts with each of us. We each need to be part of the solution and part of bringing us back from the brink of wherever we are in a nation. There's an event coming up locally that has been planned for a long time, not in response to this, but certainly can be a healing event, I think, in our community. It's been going on for decades. Since about 1978, when the first one was held. It's called the Harvest Leadership Prayer Breakfast, and was started many years ago by a local businessman some of you may have heard of or may know, Howard Dahl, also under the leadership of Art Grimstead, who is the late Art Grimstead, who is a professor at Concordia College and also a pastor, and felt a need for our community to come together and have this kind of an event every year. So it's been going on for a long time, and we've had several excellent speakers around the country. We've had several seminal events that a lot of people remember and look back on fondly and treasure. And many people that are familiar with the event make it a regular occurrence. They put it on their calendar. They say, I don't care who's speaking. I'm going to be there because I know it's going to be good. And it's coming up on October 4th at 9 a.m., which is a Saturday. It's 2 weeks from tomorrow, actually, at the Fargo Holiday Inn. And this year we have two speakers that I think are going to be excellent. And one of them is actually in studio with us here. Her name is Bethany Barnett. She's a local author. And she's written a book partially about the other speaker, about him and a few other folks. His name is John Corcoran, and he's a former Irish Army Ranger. And the name of the book is called About Face. And the title of the event is Peace Within the Battle. And that says a lot. I guess any of us who have known or had friends or family members who are in the military, maybe just that title evokes some imagery and some thinking about what it must mean when you're in the middle of the battle. We've all heard about things like PTSD and some of the effects of military service and being in war and that sort of thing. And how do people recover from that? How do they come back and put their lives back together? And maybe it leads some to question, what's life all about? You know, how do I make sense of all of this? And so I'm not sure exactly what we're going to hear from John and Bethany that day, but it's going to be part of that story, and I think it's going to be great. So, Bethany, welcome. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Kim. It's great to be with you here tonight.
And so tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to write this book.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate this opportunity to share and to connect with the community. I grew up in Little Falls, Minnesota. I'm a Midwesterner myself, and then came to NDSU for graduate school. And I studied English in the English department there, had a wonderful experience, and just really grew in a desire to write and to tell stories. But I also, you know, really have always loved working with people. And so my first job after graduating from college was to move to the nation of Ireland. sounds exciting,
it
right?
Does.
Graduate, move to Ireland. And I did youth work and also, as I progressed in my career, worked with the Ministry of Adult and Teen Challenge in Ireland. And so during that time, just really developed a love for, you know, seeing the work of Teen Challenge, seeing the work that God can do in any life. And for those of you that don't know about the work of Teen Challenge, it is a faith-based recovery program with a wonderful success rate, just so many lives really brought back from the brink of destruction. And, you know, just it's wonderful to see people find freedom and hope. And on the staff team that I worked at, so I worked at a women's Teen Challenge Center in Ireland and at the kind of brother program, as it were, there was a men's program, and one of my colleagues there was John Corcoran, who, as I got to know him, I realized that he was a former Irish Army Ranger, so involved in the Special Forces, and had, you know, that experience. Now, at that same time, as you know, my brother was serving with the U.S. military, and he'd done four deployments, two of them to Iraq. And, you know, his 2007 deployment was really difficult. And when he was repatriating to the United States, I left Ireland and came back to stay with him. And during that time, I just, you know, I was just there really to help him, you know, readjust and all of that. But there was just this distance, a silence, that I couldn't understand at the time. So when I moved back to Ireland then, months later, I asked John, this Irish Army Ranger, tell me your story. And that really was the beginning of About Face, finding peace within the battle. And what I tell people is that About Face is the life stories of three Irish military veterans, their experience in the outlaw motorcycle fraternity, and the experience of finding faith in Jesus Christ that changed everything for them. And, you know, it's the chronicle of life stories, but it's also a conversation. And what we want to do through this book is really to invite people into that conversation, both to see and hear a story of hope, but also to think about their own story.
Very good. And, you know, it's interesting. By the way, if you're near your phone or your computer or iPad or whatever, and you want to see the face of the lady you're hearing, along with the face of the gentleman that will be her co-speaker at this event, you can go to a website, prayerbreakfast.net. Again, prayerbreakfast.net. Or if you're on Facebook, go to Harvest Leadership Prayer Breakfast on Facebook. You'll see the poster, the promotional material for this event, and get to see a little picture of John and Bethany and some other information about it. If you want to call in and join us, if you have questions or comments, so we encourage you to do that. The Valley Christian Counseling phone line is 701-271-1100. You can reach us at that number and comment and join the conversation. You can also email studio@flagfamily.com, or you can text us at 701-237-1590, 237-1590. So, Bethany, you're talking about this in an intriguing-sounding story. Those books, by the way, the book entitled About Face that you've written, will be available at this breakfast if people want to buy a copy, as I understand it.
Absolutely. There will be copies there for sale.
Excellent.
And also, it is our launch event. We're going to be launching onto Audible, our audiobook version, which is, you know, long anticipated.
Yes.
And so we're very excited about that. So it's going to be a real celebration that morning.
Excellent. And we are really looking forward to it. You know, when you hear a story, this poster that I just referred you to, if you go to the website or the Facebook page, the picture of John Corcoran there, not sure what color his hair is, but I don't think it's his natural color. Somebody said, what color is that guy's hair anyway? And he's wearing a jean vest kind of thing with patches and all that, kind of the motorcycle gang look. And sometimes people look at someone like that and go, boy, that doesn't look like a Jesus freak to me. That doesn't look like a Christian to me. I mean, I'm not sure what a Christian is supposed to look like, but it begs the question of, you know, people, what kind of people need to find the Lord, need to find faith in their life, and need to discover why that's important. And I don't know if you have a comment on that, but I always am intrigued by that. So here's this guy, you know, who's an army ranger in Ireland,
yeah,
from Ireland, and who is in this outlaw motorcycle gang. And if somehow I just don't get imagery of you know, singing hymns and sitting in a pew somewhere.
Well, he breaks the mold for sure, or breaks the stereotype, I should say. Certainly, yeah, the biker jacket and the,
yep,
yeah, for sure, the tattoos. Yeah, so
yep,
he doesn't scream, I'm in the church choir.
Exactly.
For sure,
but exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
No choir role there. But that's the important piece of this, I think. I love stories like that, that talk about the fact that faith is, you know, we're all spiritual beings, mm-hmm, and faith is important to every one of us. And finding, you know, finding that in our life is sometimes, for some, a lifetime quest. For others, something that maybe happened a long time ago. And sadly, for others, something they never find. And so I think it'll be very interesting to hear John's story, to hear you talk more about your encounter and meeting him and so on. So we're looking forward to that.
Oh, absolutely. Me too. I can't wait for that morning. I have attended other years, and it's just a fantastic morning. So many wonderful people gathered together who care about this community. You know, business leaders, political leaders, you know, people that are involved in charities, and people who are just curious. And I would invite anybody, if you would love to hear a story of hope, if you're just in need of hope right now, if you're in need of just something to lift your eyes up right now, come along, get a ticket, come along, bring a friend. You will leave with your heart lifted. I know that John has a challenging talk for us. He's going to share his own personal story, but mm-hmm, also just share some words of encouragement and exhortation for us to lift up our eyes. But just to the comment you made, Kim, you know, John's, and I won't give away the story, but yeah, his son did come to faith in Christ first. Mm-hmm. But I interviewed him as part of my work on this book. There's
sure,
obviously a huge research part before I began writing. And, you know, he said if there was anyone that God could not reach, it was my dad. You know, he's got this outlaw motorcycle,
yep,
you know, former Army Ranger dad who kicks him out of the house for being a Christian, you know, and he says if there was anyone that God couldn't reach, it was my dad. And, you know, and he laughs about that now, saying, like, God blew me out of the water because there's sure, no such thing.
That's, you know, it's sort of a rebellion in reverse,
right,
you know. Usually it's the kid that goes astray and
exactly,
the parent that's trying to draw them back. But that's very interesting. So this event, for those that may not be familiar with the Harvest Leadership Prayer Breakfast, it's not a sectarian event. It is non-denominational. People come from all walks of, mm-hmm. of the Christian faith, and people come who don't know the Lord. They're just coming to say, hey, you know, I'm see what this is all about. Come and have a nice breakfast and hear some good music and hear a good talk and interact with some other people. And I think as a result of that, people have been, there's an impact there that is broader than maybe a lot of people realize. So we invite everyone to take a look at that and come and the tickets are available. There are a couple phone numbers at that website that people can call for tickets. 701-491-0665 is one of those, or 701-730-6500. And maybe give those numbers again a little bit later. And you can also buy tickets at the door. They're $25 at the door, $23 if you buy them in advance. Save a couple of bucks. And I have to give a shout-out to the Holiday Inn because they have kept their prices the same for the last couple of years, and I don't know of any other business that's doing that right now with the inflationary mm-hmm. times we've lived through. So we appreciate their hosting us and inviting us to come back and valuing this event. But we have on the phone also, I believe, another gentleman who is involved in this effort, a local businessman and a guy who has become part of this ministry, I guess, called Peace Within the Battle, Gary Opp. Gary, are you with us?
I am, Kim. Good to hear you. Addison had me plugged in on the other line, so I was able to listen while it was on hold here.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate you joining us. So what do you have to say about this event coming up? How would you describe it? How would you encourage people to come and join us?
Yeah, exciting. Yeah, so as we're building the momentum, just thank you for taking this platform to start the advertising. Well, I guess not start it because we've started a few weeks back, but and for Bethany taking the time to come in the studio there mm-hmm. and just putting our shoulder to the plow and doing the things that we need to do to have a successful event. And just, as we spoke about before one other time, is just the power of a story and just hearing somebody's story and how it relates to me, mm-hmm. to the listeners, you know, and how can we apply that to our life and how God is in full control of things and can give us that picture through mm-hmm. the story of about face and for Bethany putting the pen to the paper years ago and how she can just share the divine intervention of, you know, she didn't go out looking for it. She didn't seek it. It kind of, the Lord led her to that. So there's just, Kim, there's so many things that are exciting about this event. And then for me personally, John is just a dear friend. We've grown very close over the last 7-8 years, whatever it's been. And he actually comes in tomorrow night and will be in our community leading up into October 4th. And we're big boys, you know, we're just little kids. And we're first thing we're going to do is he lands on Saturday night and we're going to go on a motorcycle ride. And we've set up a ride through our community and then out to Ottertail Lake. And so we're going to have some fun for sure on the front side. He's going to get to meet some people that he hasn't met and some friends of the ministry.
Excellent.
And So anyway, Kim, to get back to your question on your listening audience right now, mm-hmm. I have a granddaughter, Addison and Kinsley, 11 years old. Mm. And when they heard that I was coming onto the radio, they were excited to listen to me about this October 4th event. And I'm going to do everything I can to get her in a car and come and join us that night. Maybe even Kinsley too, but it's age appropriate. The event mm-hmm. is for children, young adults. And I think the message will be loud and clear, you know, as far as just trying to listen to the whisper of God and how he impacts our lives.
Excellent. And that's a great point, Gary. The event is appropriate for kids. It's appropriate for young families. It's appropriate for old folks like me and probably for everybody in between. And you know, you hinted at this, but I've known you to wear a leather vest and straddle a motorcycle too. So this is kind of fit with your interests.
Yeah, and that's something new that I've taken up.
Yes.
Only, in the last 6 years, and I'm finding some freedom behind the bars of a Harley Davidson.
How about that? You and I think maybe a lot of other folks, maybe a lot of our listeners today. So that's really good to hear. What drew you to being involved in this ministry? You talked a little bit about Bethany's involvement, and you become involved.
Yeah. So, and I'll try to keep it short. But this is how it started for me. I do jail ministry, and one fall evening, it was cold, and I waited for another gal that was in with the women doing ministry because I didn't want her to have to go out into a dark parking lot. And she hands me this book about faith, and it was Bethany's mom, and that's how it started for me. And it was, hey, this Irishman is thinking about coming over here and doing a little book tour. Could you help us? And that's how it started for me. And instantly through email and stuff, I became close friends with John, and it's been just one adventure after another.
Excellent. Well, I've had the opportunity to meet John just briefly on one occasion, but when he was here previously. But I'm looking forward to renewing that acquaintance and to welcoming him at that breakfast and hearing from him and from Bethany and all that they have to share. So we need to go to a break here and take a little time to pay the rent, I guess, is the way this works. And we will be back with Bethany Barnett and Gary Ott. Good afternoon and welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is Kim Koppelman sitting in for Steve Hallstrom today, and it's good to have you with us. And we have been talking about a number of things, but let me give you the contact information if you want to join our conversation. You can call us at the Valley Christian Counseling phone line, which is at 701-271-1100. You can email us at studio@faithfamily.com, or you can text us at 701-237-1100. 1590. We've been talking about several things today, quite a bit of contemplation about the Charlie Kirk assassination and the fallout from that, as you've probably all been hearing from many quarters about. But there are some salient thoughts there, I think, and perspectives to share. We had David Zimmer from Center of the American Experiment on with us the first hour talking about those things. And in the last half hour, we've been visiting with Bethany Barnett and Gary Opp, and they are both involved in the upcoming Valley Christian Leadership Association-sponsored event, which is called the Harvest Leadership Prayer Breakfast. That's October 4th at 9 a.m. at the Fargo Holiday Inn. And this year, it's featuring a gentleman named John Corcoran, who is a former Irish Army Ranger and a former outlaw gang member, motorcycle gang member, I'm told, and the author of the book about him and some other folks, Bethany Barnett, who is a Minnesotan, as we say, but went to school here at NDSU, she said, her graduate school, and she's written a fascinating book called About Face, about the experience that John and some others had, and I'm really anxious to hear what they have to say on that Saturday morning. So those of you that might be interested in learning more about that event can find more information at a website, prayerbreakfast.net, or you can go to a Facebook page, Harvest Leadership Prayer Breakfast. Again, Harvest Leadership Prayer Breakfast on Facebook, and get more information at either of those places. You can buy tickets at the door for $25 if you want to save a few dollars, $23 in advance, and you can call to get connected for tickets at 701-491-0065. Or 701-730-6500, 791-0665, or 730-6500. And Bethany, what comes to mind when you try to connect the dots, if you do at all, between where our country is? You know, John Corcoran has had the experience of serving in the military. Maybe, I don't know if he's had PTSD, but, you know, certainly gut-wrenching experiences, I'm sure, in doing that. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, this event was planned for a long time, and now we find ourselves in a window of time when our country has been jolted by this recent event. Has God up to something here?
Oh, wow. Well, absolutely. I think one thing that we talk about as a ministry, Peace Within the Battle, but also within About Face as a book, is the importance of being able to process difficulty and trauma. And, you know, even as I was looking for answers about trauma as I interviewed John, you know, the healing of his trauma, and Jaron and Kevin, who also shared their stories. I mean, that process of telling your story and understanding to a greater level what's happened, how it impacted me, and, you know, how events fit together is so important. And, you know, we were talking about it off air, you know, just the idea that there are people in our communities right now who are really hurting, and people are, sometimes we say really hurtful things when we're hurting, and, you know, we're seeing some of that, things that can drive us further apart. And that's unfortunate. You know, we want to try not to make comments that are going to cause further hurt and further pain, in the midst of a tragedy like this. But I think it's just really important for people to come together at events like the Harvest Leadership Prayer Breakfast, and really in a positive space and in an uplifting space, to be able to connect over some of that. And I find prayer to be one of the most wholesome, helpful, and powerful ways to do that, because we're processing both our pain, but also our desire and our longing for hope in a positive space. So I'm not sure if you wanted to comment on that as far as what the event looks like.
And I think, you know, it's, I find myself trying to put myself in the place of people just hearing about this, like many of our listeners probably are. And I suspect that we have people that are devout people of faith that hear this, and it connects and makes sense. And they think, yeah, this is something I'd be interested in. I'd love to take part in, and we hope they will. But you have other people who may say, oh, this God stuff, I mean, I'm not into that, and what's this all about? Why should they come to an event like this?
Well, I have to laugh. You know, the conversation we were having before the commercial break was really like a story where God can take someone from being so far away, looking like the most unlikely character. You were saying John isn't the type to be wearing the choir robe. And yet, you know, we're all spiritual beings, as you say, and we might understand that to different levels. But I really believe that an event like this can bring anyone together. And prayer doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be that very religious experience. Prayer is communication, and that's for all of us. And I think prayer is a place where we can reach out from a deep place within us. It doesn't need to sound right. It doesn't have to be super holy, but it can just be the expression of the wishes that we have for a positive future. And I think, again, for me, I would say that prayer has been incredibly powerful, incredibly healing. So if that's something you're interested in, you don't have to be a super religious person, but, you know, come along and feel free to even just observe. But again, I would say John is the least religious kind of appearing and sounding person you'll meet, just such a down-to-earth person. But another thing I wanted to add to that, Kim, and maybe this is just a springboard for your comments here, but I think that this, you know, this is a moment where, you know, so many people have actually visually seen an assassination. And I'm really sad about that, because I think we're not designed to watch that type of violence. And yet we do. I mean, we there are many places where people see that. But I think we've almost become dull through, you know, movies and media to the idea that we're actually not designed to consume that. We're not designed to see that. And there were a number of violent crimes that took place in the media, or, you know, in our country over the last weeks. And I think, you know, that's harmful to us. It's horrible that it happens, but it's harmful for us to see it. And there were many college students who saw that live. And I sort of want to make this statement, and as you know, I'm in my master's program to become a clinical mental health counselor. I'm not licensed yet, I'll say that. But, you know, as I study, I'm just becoming increasingly aware of the fact that both, we're not designed to experience that trauma, and it wounds us. But then on the other side, what I would say is we are designed to heal. And I think I want to say that as a statement of hope to people. First of all, that whether you, you know, were physically present at the assassination, whether you watched it online, or whether in some other scenario, whether in the military or just a horrible situation you've experienced, you are experiencing that trauma or that wound, or, you know, you're experiencing those symptoms, you know, I really want to encourage people. We are designed to heal. Mm-hmm. And what you hear in John's story, what you would hear at the Harvest Leadership Prayer Breakfast is a story where someone says, you know, I did not heal initially. I did not seek help. I did not admit that I was struggling, and I wouldn't let people help me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, on the verge of losing everything, I was willing to ask for God's help, you know, and to mm-hmm. receive incredible unconditional love and healing. Secondly, to reach out to agencies that help
mm-hmm.
and friends and family that do as well. And so, and I think what we do know is that the sooner we reach out for help,
mm-hmm.
the better the outcomes. And so I kind of just want to put that out
yeah.
there that, you know, people are being affected by this event, but we are designed to heal.
Well, that's very true, Bethany. And you know, a lot of people have talked about the mental health crisis in our world, mm-hmm. in our nation. And I think there's a lot of connection with what mm-hmm. with that event and with where people are. And whether it's someone who has been in the military, someone who suffered from PTSD, you talked about your brother as an example. And a lot of folks, I'm sure, who are listening have friends or family members or associates who fit that description. I mean, they've been in, even people that are, you know, what we call weekend warriors, and I don't mm. say that as a negative term at all. The brave people who serve in the National Guard mm. and the reserves and so on, and are often sent to places where it's very foreign to their daily life, and
yes.
they might witness something like that. They might, you know, be a part of something like that. And what kind of scars does that leave? And so I think this is also something that people who are grappling with that can find some encouragement and some help. And you know, there was a comedian once who said, "There's no such thing as an atheist. When the ground shakes, you look up." And I think mm-hmm. for a lot of people, maybe you've never darkened the door of a church, but you say, "What's this prayer breakfast thing all about?" It's a safe place you can go and just kind of check all that out. So, Gary, and I think you're still on the line with us here.
Yep.
Any comments? I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah, I don't know, some deep stuff here for sure. And I just, I would encourage, said that, you know, I don't believe there's any non-believers might not believe it.
Gary, I think you're cutting out here. I'm sorry. I don't know if you're in a bad spot with your cell phone or.
Am I okay now?
Yeah, you are. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. So I just wanted to make the comment that, you know, as far as a non-believer, I believe everybody believes in something. They just might not believe in the Bible. They might not believe in the person of Jesus Christ, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this event is a safe place for yep. people to come and just hear about how John was transformed in his life and the different areas that he was led to. And I want to go back to the motorcycle ministry, right,
yep.
of the motorcycle culture. John never left those people.
Right.
All he did was change the patch on his back, which now reads God Squad MC.
Mm-hmm.
And he still goes back into those clubhouses and runs with those guys, rides with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And what he does is he brings a little bit of Jesus in to
yeah.
those arenas that he goes back to. He's still friends with those guys, and he'll pray for them when they need encouragement. So for somebody that is skeptical, it's just a church thing, it's just a prayer breakfast. No, it's not. It tells a story about a person that made some choices, good and bad, and now of his journey with Jesus Christ. And take that for what it's worth. But I would encourage anybody to do it. And then to the comment of the last week's events and stuff, you know, as we search for truth, right? That's what everybody wants is truth.
Mm-hmm.
And purpose in our lives. We go wherever we need to find those things. And some of us have found it in the Bible, and we know for sure that the world isn't falling apart. It's falling into place.
Mm.
And God warned of these things that would come.
Mm.
And in fact, sadly, it warns that it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
And so where do you find your anchor? Where do you find your peace within the battle?
Hmm.
And that's everybody's choice. And we would encourage people to come and listen to that message.
Well, very well said, Gary. And we appreciate Gary and Bethany being with us today, talking about the Harvest Leadership Prayer Breakfast coming up October 4th at the Fargo Holiday Inn, 9 a.m. And you can find more information at prayerbreakfast.net or on Facebook at Harvest Leadership Prayer Breakfast. So thank you again for being with us, and feel free to stick around for a couple moments. I want Addison to play something for us here relating back to the Charlie Kirk assassination, and it's a clip from, well, it's self-explanatory, I think, but this is Kate's story, and it's about this effort entitled America Better Than This.
Hello, my name is Jason Hahn, and I serve as the Chief Technology Officer for the National Institute for Civil Discourse. But today I'm here in a different role, as an uncle, and my niece is with me today, Kate Lewis, and she had a pretty tragic experience happen to her. She was just 15 feet away near the front row when Charlie Kirk was tragically shot and killed in Utah Valley University. And today we want to honor Charlie's legacy by starting a national conversation, one that rejects political violence and instead encourages constructive, respectful civil dialogue across America. So, Kate, thank you so much for being here and for your courage in sharing your story. Well, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
I graduated from Maple Mountain High School this past May, and I am now attending BYU in Utah. So I first started listening to Charlie Kirk about 3 years ago, and his message really challenged me. He showed and taught courage and the importance of standing up for what you believe in, which I thought was just really cool. He wasn't afraid to say what needed to be said, and he inspired me to do more than just listen. So I decided to start a chapter of Turning Point at my school. It started small, just a couple friends, a couple conversations, but we grew and got dozens of members. Charlie really encouraged having that hard conversation, talking about those hard things, and it's okay to disagree, and disagreement is good. Was able to talk to different people that I may disagree with, and it was really interesting to hear their perspectives and why they thought that. And these discussions were just so good to have, and it taught me so much. As a high school student, as a college student, it's just so easy to stay quiet. It feels safer to just go along with the crowd. But Charlie's example showed that silence isn't neutral. Silence means letting other voices shape the culture while you sit back. So I have a friend, but we are on very opposite sides of the political spectrum. So we've had a lot of disagreements, but I think it just makes our relationship stronger, these disagreements.
Now I want to talk about this event. You were there, what, on the, like, the second row, probably really excited to see Charlie and see what that was like.
So he walked out, and it was just, the energy was electric. He got through the first question. And then the second question, someone asked about gun violence. Before he had a chance to answer, there was a lot of popping noise, and then I saw a hole in his neck, and he was, blood was spilling out. We all just instinctively dropped to the ground. My whole body was shaking, and I've never prayed so hard in my life.
So what can we learn as a country from this tragedy then?
Violence is not the answer, that's for sure. I think just having these hard conversations and talking about it, I think it's so good for us. Without these conversations, these walls just get deeper between the disagreements. To everyone feeling discouraged by the division, I just want to say, don't shrink back. Stand firm in what you believe. Speak out. Engage with courage. I think this is what Charlie would have wanted.
That's beautiful. Kate, thank you for your openness and your willingness to share what you've been through. Your voice reminds us that even in the face of this tragedy, that there's still hope. And after witnessing that, it's amazing that courage is where you land. It's not fear. So I really, really applaud that. And to everyone watching this moment, it's about more than just one loss. It's about the kind of America that we choose to be. So at the National Institute for Civil Discourse and through voices like Kate's, we're trying to build a movement that says no to violence and yes to respect, to dialogue, and yes to the constructive engagement across all of our differences. We invite you to join us in that mission. Together, we can honor Charlie's legacy and ensure that as Americans, we are truly better than this.
Thank you for joining the hashtag Better Than This movement. It's a powerful way to honor Charlie's legacy of debate over violence.
So Charlie Kirk's organization, Turning Point USA, has, I'm told, 2,100 official chapters, 2,100. Since the assassination, there have been over 54,000 requests to start new chapters. 2,100 versus 54,000. I think we can all take stock in that as a positive reaction to this. And in closing, let's play a clip from gentleman named Ken in Ohio and his comment, which I think is good for all of us to ponder.
Hi, I firmly stand with all Americans who condemn political violence of any kind. And whether you're liberal, conservative, or independent, we need to understand that we can disagree with each other, but we need to be able to respect each other as fellow Americans. Thank you.
Well, with that, we'd like to thank you all for joining us today and thank Gary Opp and Bethany Barnett for being with us during this hour, talking about the upcoming Harvest Leadership Prayer Breakfast. And let this be a time when we can all ponder how we can be part of the solution in a time of great problems in our nation. God bless you and be with you. And Kim Koppelman, great to be your guest host today.